It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
With a stroke of his executive pen, President Trump today invited what may be the biggest challenge to his executive power yet.
We're talking about an invasion of our country with drugs, with human traffickers, with all types of criminals and gangs.
In total, President Trump is looking at $8 billion to build his border wall, $1.37 billion from the DHS appropriation, $601 million from the Treasury Department's forfeiture fund, $2.5 billion from the Pentagon's drug interdiction program, including $2.2 billion that will be reprogrammed from other areas of the Pentagon, and $3.6 billion from the military construction budget. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi ripped the president for raiding the Pentagon budget to build a wall in a joint statement saying the president's unlawful declaration over a crisis that does not exist does great violence to our Constitution and makes America less safe, stealing from urgently needed defense funds for the security of our military and our nation. The president today insisted moving the money would not hurt the military.
We had certain funds that are being used at the discretion of generals, at the discretion of the military. Some of them haven't been allocated yet, and some of the generals think that this is more important.
In making his case, President Trump today pointed to dozens of emergency declarations that never drew the type of fire he's receiving. But those declarations weren't used as a way to go around Congress on appropriations. The president also gave his critics more ammunition today when he seemed to indicate the emergency declaration wasn't necessary.
I didn't need to do this, but I'd rather do it much faster. And I don't have to do it for the election. I've already done a lot of wall.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was John Roberts on Friday night on Special Report. And as you well know, the Congress passed that huge spending bill. I mean, we are already $22 trillion in debt, but that doesn't stop them from funding things absolutely out of control. They gave government workers over a 1% pay increase, which they did everything they could to pad agencies with their friends. And I'm going to get into that in more detail in just a second. But just to put this in perspective, the bill came out at 12:13 a.m. on Thursday. It was 1,169 pages. And there was a 69-page report that accompanied it. And then Congress set about to pass it as quickly as they could. And pass it, they did. 83-16 in the Senate, 300-128 in the House. The president signed the bill into law. And I have to say, I'm kind of heartsick about this. And I'm going to get into that a little bit later. But I want to go to something that happened last night. Many of you probably tuned in to CBS 60 Minutes last night and heard Andrew McCabe, the former deputy director of the FBI, the acting director after James Comey was fired. Andrew McCabe, of the fame of, you know, orchestrating this effort to undermine the presidency of Donald Trump in what looked to me like to be an act of sort of revenge for firing James Comey, his friend. Couched in a high-minded notion that they were saving the country because the president, of course, they tried to make the case, was colluding with the Russians, and that's why he won the election, none of which there was any proof of. In fact, you heard Andrew McCabe. You would hear him if you listened to the whole interview. You should listen to it, really, where he claims that, you know, the president spoke about Russia privately so favorably. In fact, in one closed-door session, he heard the president talk about North Korea, and he was advised by national security experts in the room that North Korea had, and they thought that he had Kim Jong-un had enough weaponry to reach the shores of the United States. And the president responded, well, you know, Vladimir Putin said that he did not. And he said, I actually, in this case, trust Vladimir Putin. And based on that, that was one of the reasons why Andrew McCabe was flabbergasted that he would cite Vladimir Putin on that. and many other things, public remarks about the Russians getting Hillary's email publicly as a joke. He said that on the campaign trail. All of these things to Andrew McCabe and the others was proof that he was colluding with the Russians. And he really got into some very, what I think are going to be damning pieces of information about Rod Rosenstein, as though Rod Rosenstein could be punished by anyone. No one seems to be punished in any of this. But I want you to hear what Andrew McCabe said last night to Scott Pelley about Rod Rosenstein. Here it is.
The Deputy Attorney General offered to wear a wire into the White House. He said, I never get searched when I go into the White House. I could easily wear a recording device. They wouldn't know it was there. The discussion of the 25th Amendment was simply Rod raised the issue and discussed it with me in the context of thinking about how many other cabinet officials might support such an effort.
See, you have to understand how insidious this is. Rod Rosenstein was the acting attorney general because Jeff Sessions had recused himself, because they advised Jeff Sessions to recuse himself. How convenient, because they knew what they had done to the lead up to the election, how they had tried to destroy Donald Trump with that phony, fake dossier, how they had gone into the FISA court and presented it as evidence when they knew it was not. They did criminal acts in the process of trying to undermine and destroy what was then the duly elected president of the United States. And they were mad at him for firing their director Comey, which by statute, the president of the United States can fire anyone that works for him under his employ for any reason at will. Even if you thought Comey was the best thing since sliced bread, it was not illegal, immoral, or unethical to fire him. But they were out to get back at President Trump, and I think they couched it all in this alleged patriotism that they were trying to save the country because they thought Russia was, they hoped that Russia was colluding with the president, and this would give them a reason to get rid of him. And I want also to say, as you listen to that interview, I was reminded of how slimy Scott Pelley is on CBS. He really is so slimy. So, Mr. Cape, you actually did that because you were concerned for the country, right? You were so concerned, you felt compelled. I mean, it was pretty nauseating. If you don't, I'm thinking even an objective person must surely know that he was trying to cover for Andrew McCabe in that interview. By the way, you might be interested to be reminded that CBS, the vice president of CBS is David Rhodes, who is the brother of Ben Rhodes, who was the Obama operative who fabricated the Iran deal, laughed about how he got over on people. Ben Rhodes is a leftist hack, and his brother, of course, is the vice president of CBS. So don't be surprised if they might try to kind of help this narrative against President Trump along. In fact, you see President Obama's hand, his fingerprint, almost everywhere. And that's the thing that no one ever talks about. But I'm getting off base here. I want to share a little bit more with you. All right. So just to remind you of a few things, Rod Rosenstein had said that he did not do this. He did not. Oh, he didn't do that. In fact, the Justice Department released a message or a statement after McCabe's interview was aired last night, saying that he's all wrong. He's got his facts incorrectly. Andy McCarthy writes a long article about that, about how Rod Rosenstein really doesn't deny. He just denies the details. I never said that this many times. I never actually did this. My position wouldn't allow that. He doesn't really deny that he offered to wear the wire. Not really. And he also doesn't deny that he brought up the 25th Amendment, which allows the vice president and the members of cabinet, the majority of them, if they feel that the president has some level of inability to govern the nation, they can step in. And, of course, the statute was put in place for illness. I'm trying to think of the president. I think maybe it was Wilson who had a stroke. There were other reasons why presidents sometimes in their capacity, might have been even, you know, Roosevelt with his disabilities, there may have been times when he was not capable. It was supposed to be something not to replace the impeachment clause of the Constitution, which allows through the legislature, the elected body of the people, to make a decision on the fitness of a man to be president. This was supposed to be about, this was initiated for insiders, and maybe with the president's permission even, to render him incapacitated at least for a time so that the business the government can take on and the nation can be run if a president is found incapable for whatever reason. But they decided they were going to use this, but it was not in their power to use it. So they actually started trying to count heads to see how many people in the cabinet that they could get to support this. And they went to the chief legal counsel of the FBI, and he told them that you're way out of line, and so they stopped. There's so much to say about this. Lindsey Graham called McCabe's comments last night beyond stunning, and he is threatening to call McCabe and Rosenstein before the Senate Judiciary Committee to talk about, on the record, what they're doing. And you might remember that McCabe and Rosenstein have refused to appear before the House committees. They've just stalled. It's really kind of amazing. Mark Penn was an operative for Bill Clinton. He was a pollster. And he's an amazingly honest guy. And this is what he said about all of this. Clip 6.
McCabe is pointing the finger at Rosenstein for trying to invoke the 25th Amendment and wiretap the president. Rosenstein says, hey, I didn't do that. But McCabe triggered the obstruction investigation and independent counsel. And on what basis did he do so? Under, quote, the fear that he might be removed. He didn't do it on the basis of an actual crime that occurred. In fact, rather than being shunted away, McCabe was made acting head of the FBI. So rather than wait for a new FBI director to come in, be approved by the Senate, maybe look at these FISA warrants, maybe see that some things were amiss with this dossier, maybe see that Christopher Steele was fired for lying. Rather than that, they created the independent counsel so that they could have this investigation done by their own friends and supporters. And that's what was done here, and it's totally illegal. They didn't like the outcome of the election. And more importantly, they didn't like that their director was fired. And all of this was a retaliatory action for the director being fired, even though Rod Rosenstein wrote the memo to have him fired. They all got together and said, well, maybe we can use the 25th Amendment. Maybe we can get him out this way. Maybe we can hold a wire. Oh, maybe we can do an independent counsel. All in retaliatory action for the firing of James Comey. What a deep state. What a mess. McCabe was fired for lying. Who knows who is telling the truth here? All three of these top figures contradict each other multiple times on multiple stories.
Yeah, it's actually true. And, I pulled that clip a few days ago and did, but I saw the full McCabe interview this morning, and I came away with the same thing that Mark just said, that this was all about retaliation because their friend, James Comey, was fired from the FBI and humiliated. And so they were sort of out to get the president, if for no other reason than that, and they were looking for excuses to do it. Andy McCarthy writes that McCabe actually, Rosenstein actually was guilty of, he was very guilty, but he was also a sweetheart of the swamp. Andy writes that when none of the other nominees for President Trump were able to get through confirmation, Andrew McCabe, Rod Rosenstein sailed through because he was a creature of the swamp. And once he wrote that memo suggesting that James Comey be fired, he thought when he wrote the memo, says Andy, and I think he's right about it, that he would be pleasing people in both parties because the Democrats were mad at Comey for bringing up the Clinton investigation right before the election, and the Republicans were mad at Comey for the way he had behaved with Donald Trump. And so he thought he was sort of pleasing both of them, but as it happened, it backfired. And then in the social circles in which he operates, and you cannot even overstate the power of Washington social circles, reading the New York Times, reading the Washington Post, being invited to certain parties, it really is head spinning and it's head turning. For someone who's touched a bit of that world, I can tell you I'm generally not on the cocktail circuit because I can't stand that. But I've seen it, I've tasted it. And it's compelling and seductive. And boy, you don't want to be caught out of it because that's the hub of the whole world right there. That spin on the news, that inner circle thing. And so in an effort to sort of make up and win favor back, Rosenstein became a strong leader of the other team, even trying to take down the president. So we'll see what's going to happen here. There's more to say about this, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
A call to action from American Family Radio.
There's all kind of difficulty in the world, but as the Word of God says, If your brother's in need and you have it within your ability to respond to their need, how can you claim to have love if you allow them to go without? What greater need is there than the need to live? I know life is rough, but it don't have nothing to do with the baby. Don't kill the baby. Don't wait for preborn campaigns. Don't wait for legislation to be passed in your state legislature. Don't wait till Roe versus Wade is overturned. Respond now. I believe with everything in me that we can end this scourge regardless of what they do in the halls of Congress and the halls of the state legislature. Every single family, every single church, go to the local abortion clinics. Let them know that you have people in your churches, people in your family that are willing to take the babies home. They have families that have been dying to take a child home. Don't kill the babies.
Visit AFR.net.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
For President's Day, we honor the memories of past presidents, and we honor our five living presidents, Carter, Bush, Clinton, Obama, and President Trump. Psalm 32:8 reminds us that good leadership begins by obeying God's will in all of our decision-making. I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will counsel you with my loving eye on you. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we thank you for guiding the hands of our presidents, and we ask you to continue to bless our nation and its leaders. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. Come join our President's Day Challenge. Details available at pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. Find out what happens when a patriot is heckled during the Pledge of Allegiance next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
There's been a simmering feud over the Pledge of Allegiance in Santa Barbara, California. In January, the City College Board of Trustees stopped reciting the pledge. They were concerned about white nationalism and racism. After much debate, the Board of Trustees reversed the ban. But when a citizen tried to pledge her allegiance, listen to what happened.
Of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's a mighty sad day in America when an elderly woman is bullied and badgered simply for pledging allegiance to the flag, America. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The 25th Amendment does not apply to the FBI. It applies to people in Congress, in the cabinet, for extraordinary circumstances, typically related to the health and of the President of the United States, none of which had any application here whatsoever. The whole thing is incredible, but even if they didn't use the 25th Amendment, what they did was trigger a series of things that now has created a two-year investigation. And look, there's a new attorney general coming in. Mm-hmm. And look, the attorney general should tell Robert Mueller, hey, wrap this up, get out your conclusions, and you know what? If you want to continue investigating, how about having Democrats and Republicans on your investigation team? How about having a balanced team in order to have credibility? Make some changes that are constructive if Robert Mueller isn't ready to finally give his report and move on.
All right, again, that was Mark Penn, the Democratic pollster. It's shocking, honestly. After hearing him defend the Clintons all those years, it's shocking for me to hear him speak out in such an honest way. And thank God for honesty. You know, I think good men of every persuasion and label can agree when truth is involved. I never mind honest disagreements. I'm all in favor of them. It's when people are dishonest and manipulative and are not willing to face the truth that I have a problem. And that's what we're in. We're drowning in a sea of lies. It's just amazing. One of the lies that McCabe told last night, he goes to great length to talk about how they introduced his wife, and she was the one who ran for Senate in Virginia and was given $700,000 by Terry McAuliffe, the governor of Virginia, who was the fundraiser for the Clintons. And so this, during the space of time when McCabe was charged with investigating Clinton's email server, Mrs. Clinton's illegal email server, in which national secrets, we know now that the Chinese and other foreign governments had access to all of her email because of her carelessness. And also, not just she was not just dumb, she knew exactly what she was doing. The idea that you protect your communications when you're in the position of Secretary of State, you're communicating with the president, all the other high cabinet officials, the idea that you would not protect them is egregious. It's criminal. And many people have gone to prison for not doing that. That's how serious a violation is. I'm not sure people ever understood. They talked about this just being her email. Because we all have email, we sort of equate our situation to hers, but it was not the same. She was placed in a position of holding the highest secrets of the land, deep secrets about what was happening. She was entrusted with that, and she abused that trust and willingly put them in a public server. They ended up on Anthony Weiner's laptop, for heaven's sake. I could go on and on. This is the stuff of a novel which would be 1,000 pages. I'm telling you, you couldn't possibly write all the twists and turns. I've been talking about it now for, well, at least 2 years myself, and it's very hard to keep up with it. I know for people trying to have a life, it's really hard to keep up with. But just let me say, Judicial Watch came out with a finding. They've retrieved some more information through their Freedom of Information Act, and this is what I want to share with you. McCabe claims last night in his interview with Pelley and with his wife sitting next to him that whole thing about his wife getting all that money from the Hillary Clinton's chief fundraiser, Terry McAuliffe, who happened to be the governor of Virginia, had nothing to do with Hillary Clinton or any, preference. And his wife claims she doesn't know Hillary Clinton. She's never met her. Yeah. So, and then he goes on to claim that it was a lie that he was working on Mrs. Clinton's emails during this period of time, that he was in the Washington field office. But I have to say that I can't break down the numbers of the dates because I didn't have time to track all that down. But this is what I'll tell you from Judicial Watch. 3 days after then FBI Director James Comey's press conference announcing he would not recommend a prosecution of Mrs. Clinton. Now, that's in July of 2016. That's when Barack Obama's still in the White House. A special counsel to the FBI's executive assistant in charge of the National Security Branch, the name is redacted, wrote Peter Strzok, who we know now was the FBI agent with the affair with Lisa Page, wrote to Peter Strzok and others that he was producing a, quote, chart of the statutory violations considered during the investigation of Mrs. Clinton's email server and the reasons for the recommendation not to prosecute. So they developed a chart of the illegalities involved in Mrs. Clinton, what she did. And then they worked out a series of reasons why not to prosecute these criminal acts. And then there are other correspondences surrounding this. I'll read what Judicial Watch says here. This is from Tom Fitton. Judicial Watch caught the FBI in another cover-up to protect Hillary Clinton. These records show that the FBI is hiding a chart detailing possible violations of law by Hillary Clinton and supposed reason she was not prosecuted. Judicial Watch released 215 pages of records from the DOJ revealing former FBI General Counsel James Baker discussed the investigation of Clinton-related emails on Anthony Weiner's laptop with Clinton's lawyer David Kendall. Baker then forwarded the conversation to these FBI colleagues, and those colleagues, of course, include Andrew McCabe. I can't go into all the details of that, but Andrew McCabe was up to his neck in this, and he was charged with overseeing that, no matter what he says in that interview. And the thing that I want to turn to now, I want to read this one last thing. I mentioned to you, I teased earlier that Andy McCarthy had written a long article about this. By the way, we'll put Andy's article on our Facebook page. But Andy quotes the statement by the Justice Department, i.e. Rod Rosenstein, saying, as to the specific portions of this interview provided to the Justice Department by 60 Minutes, Deputy Attorney General again rejects Mr. Cabe's recitation of events as inaccurate and factually incorrect. The Deputy Attorney General never authorized any recording that Mr. Cabe references. As the Deputy Attorney General previously stated, based on his personal dealings with the President, there is no basis to invoke the 25th Amendment, nor was the Deputy Attorney General in a position to consider invoking the 25th Amendment. Now, of course, you can drive a truck through that. Obviously, he didn't authorize, let me read his words exactly here. Never authorized any recording. No, he volunteered to wear a wire to catch the president saying something. And specifically, Andrew McCabe says to maybe tip his hand, the president meaning tip his hand, and as to why he fired Comey. They were trying to get this, wanted this to be obstruction of justice. So that was, he offered to. He didn't authorize it. He didn't have to. He offered to do it. And so that's just completely ridiculous. And the second part is the 25th Amendment, the DAG was not in a position to consider invoking the 25th Amendment. Well, yes, that's true. That's true, Mr. Rosenstein. You weren't in a position to authorize it, but you certainly obviously did talk about trying to find the president incompetent and to recruit people on the cabinet to do that, to make that finding. It's just really, it's amazing. And I want to bring you back to something else. You understand. I know that you do, but let me repeat again. Do you understand the number of people whose lives have been ruined by this bogus investigation, this bogus national security threat through President Trump and the Russians? You know, Rod Rosenstein and Andrew McCabe colluded to nominate Robert Mueller 7 days, I think, after Comey was fired, to be a special prosecutor. And they did that, and in McCabe's own words, this was a good pick for them. This is a good pick for them because they're all personal friends. And so through Robert Mueller's investigation, we have a couple of things. Now, you notice if you watch the 60 Minutes interview with Scott Pelley last night that they showed a frame of all the people that Bob Mueller had indicted or brought to justice, and it was circled by all these Russian entities that he had subpoenaed. Now, could I don't have time to break all this down, but let me just say that the Russians, that was a game and a show, because they knew that no Russian would ever come here and respond to those charges. And some of those companies, by the way, didn't even exist. But to Mueller's shock and surprise, a couple of those Russian companies actually did come and challenge and push back. And I shared with you the American attorney representing them and how he mocked the judge in the court because the thing was so ridiculous. But then there were other people whose names you know. There, I think of General Michael Flynn, who has been ruined financially. Ruined financially. His reputation shredded because he allegedly helped orchestrate this collision with the Russians, this non-existent in the actual execution of his own duties as the national security advisor to the president. He calls the Russian ambassador perfectly within his purview. He was put in jail, or not put in jail, he was, sorry, indicted by the grand jury for what? Lying to the FBI, which is ironically exactly what Andrew McCabe did. He lied to his colleagues about leaking to the press, and then he later lied to Congress. But has anything been done to Andrew McCabe? No, don't think so. So not yet. But meanwhile, Lieutenant General Flynn, a patriot, a man who served his country, who has laid his life on the line for his country, has been bankrupted. His family disparaged, his reputation ruined, his livelihood ruined. And then we have Paul Manafort. I can't brag about Paul Manafort in the same way I can Lieutenant General Flynn. I don't think Paul Manafort, in terms of his character, may not be someone. I'm sure there are things, shady business dealings. He's a rich Republican. Lots of them are. There are a lot of rich Democrats, too, but I'm going to talk about them for a second. But Paul Manafort's not a criminal. And you may remember they did a nighttime raid at his house. His wife was in their nightgown. They tore their house apart. They've put him in solitary confinement. It has been an unbelievable thing, all because of financial transactions, allegedly, financial dealings he had with Ukraine years and years before President Trump ever became president. So I want you to hear, this really surprised me. I wanted to play this for you last week, but we ran out of time. Jeffrey Toobin was on, I believe it's CNN, and he talked about seeing Paul Manafort in a courtroom recently, and this is what he said.
I saw Paul Manafort in court the other day, This is a man who looks like he's dying. He is walking with a cane. He looks disoriented. He has declined so precipitously in prison that when you realize he has now lost his cooperation agreement and the chance for a lower sentence, and he's facing an entirely separate prison sentence in the Virginia case, a 70-year-old man is looking like he may die in prison, and it is just a profound thing to think about.
We're showing video, but that's probably older.
No,
video.
this is how we remember him,
right.
as you know, and this is how he became a public figure during this investigation.
Right.
He is almost unrecognizable.
Really?
Today.
From this video.
Almost unrecognizable. You know, he's got gout. He's walking with a cane. Apparently, he's using a wheelchair a lot of the time. Prison is rough for anybody. And, you know, yes, he did wrong, and he did wrong over and over again. But, I mean, this man is really, really in danger of losing his life.
That's amazing, because Jeffrey Toobin is no conservative. And I feel I hear some conviction in his voice for this. And let me just say that Paul Manafort, again, whatever financial crimes he may have committed, he was treated like a violent criminal. And his home and his privacy was violated and nobody cared. And it was because he was working for President Trump for a short time. And there's nothing, no crime about any collusion, no crime related to the Trump campaign or administration. And so then I turned to Roger Stone, who also, you know, I do have some knowledge of Roger Stone and his life. I don't claim to be an expert. I don't think he's a man of the highest integrity, so I'm not defending that. But he is, he's a guy who's been around Washington for a long time, probably doing some shady deals and heaven only knows what. But as far as I know, not a criminal. I don't think he has a traffic ticket. And so this is a piece from his wife. And this is what she says. By now, I'm sure you've heard about the terrifying pre-dawn raid on the house in Fort Lauderdale where I live with my husband, Roger Stone. A little before 6 a.m., 29 assault weapon-wielding FBI agents in full tactical gear and wearing night vision goggles surrounded our home because I am hearing impaired and I was asleep. I did not hear the commotion when an FBI agent pounded on the door demanding my husband open it, and I did not know he had been handcuffed and taken into custody. I woke up only when two FBI agents burst into our bedroom and demanded that I get out of bed at gunpoint. I was marched out to the street in front of our house wearing only a nightgown and bare feet. I was instructed to stand next to my husband, who was handcuffed and was also barefoot. I am not charged with any crime. This has to be the most terrifying thing I've ever experienced, as FBI agents swarmed into our home after announcing they had a search warrant. My husband has no previous criminal record, not even a speeding ticket. He is charged and pled guilty to 7 nonviolent process crimes. We do not own a gun, and my husband's passport had actually expired. The idea that he is in danger, a danger to anyone or a flight risk, was disproven hours later, when a federal magistrate released him on a surety bond. The FBI used 29 agents, 17 vehicles, including 2 armored vehicles, a helicopter, and 2 amphibious units because our rented home backs up into a canal. Every agent was carrying an AK-47 as well as a sidearm. This is a much larger force than used to capture and kill bin Laden or arrest El Chapo. It must have cost U.S. taxpayers $500,000. Even more humiliating, for some odd reason, a CNN camera crew had arrived at our home only 50 minutes before the FBI strike force and was allowed to film the assault on our home and my husband's arrest. If my husband was considered dangerous, why was a CNN film crew in a position 10 yards from our door? How convenient that the CNN producer at our home is a foremost special assistant to FBI Director James Comey. My parents came from Cuba, and I can understand how these kinds of police state tactics can happen in a communist country, but it's hard to believe that the FBI director and acting attorney general would allow this kind of brutal assault on a U.S. citizen with no prior criminal record and charged only with nonviolent process crimes here in the United States. There's a lot more than what she says. My point is this. When you hear Andrew McCabe whining, and you hear Rod Rosenstein whining in the coming days, and you hear the new attorney general who's just been voted in by the Senate making any kind of excuses, he'd better not. You think of these people and the others that we don't have time to mention whose lives have been destroyed by this nonsense to preserve the reputations of those sitting in power at the FBI and the Justice Department. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he is held fast in the cords of his sin. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has decided the Senate will vote on the apocalyptic socialist Green New Deal. This is a brilliant move because it forces Democrat legislators to go on record concerning the proposal to eliminate air travel, retrofit or destroy every building in America, eviscerate the fossil fuel industry, and cure that pesky cow flatulence problem in 10 years. By now, it's obvious how insane the proposal is, but vote against it and you risk alienating the most energized component of the Democrat base, the radical regressives. The turtle is shrewd.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Alex, his background, he's been a pastor, yes, been a seminary professor. He's a debater. God's gifted me. I pastored for nearly 40 years. I majored in math for the first 2 years. You know what you do in math? Solve problems. Guess what you do when you're a pastor?
Solve problems.
You solve problems. Both of us love to preach.
Yes.
And every once in a while, we'll both go off on a tangent. But that's good.
Yes.
Because they get to hear our heart and our passion.
Exploring the Word, weekday afternoons at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
As a dad, you have a powerful influence on your daughter. On the next Focus on the Family, Dr. Meg Meeker shares about the special bond she had with her father and how it helped shape her life. She addresses the negative influences in the culture from peer pressure and social media and the heroic impact of a father who models humility. Next time on Focus on the Family.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. While states are legalizing marijuana for medicinal and recreational use, there's a dark underbelly to smoking pot. We're told that it's good for pain relief, but cannabis is actually associated with greater pain over time. It's far from benign. Marijuana leads to other drug use. One study found that pot users were almost three times as likely to use opiates down the road. And rather than helping with depression, it can cause or worsen severe mental illness, especially psychosis. Teens who use pot are about three times as likely to develop schizophrenia. Today's pot is anywhere from 10 to 12 times stronger than the pot of the 70s. And there's an alarming connection between today's marijuana and violence. People with schizophrenia are five times as likely to commit violent crimes. If you're smoking pot, stop. If you're not, don't start.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Tomorrow, a country half a world away will hold an election that seems likely to have a profound impact globally. Nigerians will go to the polls to choose which of two candidates will preside over the likely coming implosion of their country. Absent an urgent and effective diplomatic intervention by the United States, the real winners will be Sharia supremacists, the Fulani militants, Boko Haram, and ISIS that have been ratcheting up murderous attacks on Christians and others who stand in the way of the new caliphate they seek to establish in the heart of Africa. The losers will be millions of refugees who will predictably seek safety elsewhere, and the countries of Africa, Europe, and even North America woefully unprepared to accommodate them. Our vital interests and those of countless others require a U.S. Special Envoy for Nigeria and the Lake Chad region now. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I'm going to be signing a national emergency. And it's been signed many times before. It's been signed by other presidents. There's rarely been a problem. They sign it. Nobody cares. I'll sign the final papers as soon as I get into the Oval Office, and we will then be sued, and they will sue us in the Ninth Circuit, even though it shouldn't be there. And we will possibly get a bad ruling, and then we'll get another bad ruling, and then we'll end up in the Supreme Court, and hopefully we'll get a fair shake, and we'll win in the Supreme Court.
All right, that was the president talk. And it's a montage of what he said when he declared, when he was talking about what was going to happen. It happened last Friday. We know that the, let me break down the stats here for you. the bill that I mentioned, which was 1,169 pages long, with a 69-page report, was released at 12:13 a.m. on Thursday and voted on Friday. I heard one congressman say if he had read 100 pages an hour, every hour from 6 o'clock in the morning, he would barely finish reading it, much less have an analysis of what was in that bill. And so they passed the spending bill, which funds the government through what? The rest of fiscal 2019. The president signed the bill and then declared a state of emergency. And we're going to talk about all of that as best I can. I just want to go back to what happened in the Congress because I've told you it's like inside the Beltway, it is so, poisonous, yes, but there's like something, I mean, it's almost like something in the air that is so out of touch with reality. There's a reality in the Beltway. The Beltway is, of course, the 495, which runs all around the District of Columbia, goes up into Maryland, down to Virginia, and all the people that live in those surrounding areas work in government. It is an unusual place to live. And you can begin to think that that's the whole world. And it is certainly the hub of the wheel that, you know, kind of manages what happens in Washington affects the entire world. There's no question about it. But you can begin to think that there's no other opinion besides the echo chamber. That's what they call it, the echo chamber. Somebody across town says this, and somebody repeats it and slightly varies it, and then somebody else repeats that. And it's just a repetitive thing. You see that in mainstream news sources, which we've talked about before, how one will print a story and then they'll all echo the same thing with slight variations. It is an echo chamber, and they get into a mindset. And one of those mindsets that has a stranglehold on them is that a government shutdown is horrendous. We must do anything we can. Please, no government shutdown. Because when you live there, you live around government workers, and they complain, and it's in the papers. And you feel the pressure, and they complain to you, they talk about it, and you feel it's just terrible. And when you're a Republican with no spine, which includes what? Well, let's see, what was the count? 16 senators voted against this bill, 83 in favor. So if you break down that, I'm sure most of this, I don't know, I'm assuming most of that 16, if not all, were Republicans. So you get right there the percentage. It's what, a third? Less than a third? Have any kind of spine? So when you're a Republican like Mitch McConnell or even Chuck Grassley or those guys that stand on camera, I mean, we can't have everything to do. We can't have a government shutdown because the Washington Post writes bad things about them, you see. And that's their constituency, too. It's all big one big happy family, government workers who generally make six figures, unlike most of you. But courtesy of your tax dollars, they do. They get great benefits. They get retirement. And it's important you protect them, you see. And so I could not believe the absurdity. I have not heard this particular clip. I just know about it. So we're going to listen together. I know that they actually, on the Senate floor, prayed that Donald Trump would sign this bill. And it sounded like this.
Pray in the most holy name of Christ Jesus, our Lord. Amen.
Let's all pray that the president will have wisdom to sign the bill so the government doesn't shut down. Join me in pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Okay, well, I heard more. I think there's a chaplain of some sort that spoke first. But you heard, like, pray that the president. So we can't have a government shutdown. Oh, my goodness, people would not like us and our poll numbers would go down further. And we'd have to work more than 2.5 days a week because we'd have to settle this. And, you know, and on and on and on. I mean, it's stunning. This is so out of touch with reality. I want to tell you, let's see. I want to tell you a little bit about this bill, but I want to play some things for you that are important. The bill that was signed gave the president not $25 billion for a wall, not $5 billion, which he was asking, but $1.375 billion. If I could just quickly tell you... Let's see. I want to give you just some, you know, we'll put this on our Facebook page so that you can have it in front of you, because I can't make my way through all of these things. But the headlines are these. They can only use this money that was designated to make a steel bollard design. No concrete wall, no prototypes. They can only build what George W. Bush and Barack Obama built, and that's it. Nothing more. None of those new designs the president asked for. No, 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 no. They have to do the wall that's existing. So the border wall construction is only allowed in the Rio Grande Valley sector. And also it allows $3.4 billion in refugee assistance, $74 million more than last year. And you remember that's all those agencies that we've spent time talking about that are getting rich from the government, taking care of refugees. That's a pretty disgusting story. I think I'm not going to name names. I'd be careless if I did. There's a Lutheran organization, there's a Baptist, and there's a Catholic. I just can't think of their exact names. And that doesn't mean they're affiliated with any of your denominations. I'm just telling you, in general, that's who they are. And then Daniel Horowitz kind of lines it out here. This is one of the worst things. I've got to find this language because it's just too hard to say, too hard to repeat it. Prohibits the deportation of anyone who is sponsoring an unaccompanied minor illegal alien or who says they might sponsor an unaccompanied alien or lives in a household with an unaccompanied alien or might potentially sponsor an unaccompanied alien. You can't deport them. And so Jessica Vaughn that would describe most of these MS-13 gang members. It's just horrible. I mean, it really is horrible. It ties the president's hands. It also may make it impossible for him to spend money in local communities because it makes it imperative that he get a sign-off from local authorities before this wall is built, and that would mean like Democratic governors and local people in that some of the sectors like the Rio Grande. There are a lot of Democrats in control there. So it's going to be hard for him to do anything. Stephen Miller, who's really the expert in the White House, he really truly is the expert on immigration, has been for a long time. He's one of the president's chief speechwriters. He was on with Chris Wallace, the antagonist Chris Wallace, barking out, you know, nothing is really true to Chris. It's all political. I have trouble watching him. Yes, I do. But Stephen did it. I can't think of anyone who knows more about this than Stephen, so I'm going to be quiet, and I want you to hear Stephen Miller sparring with Chris Wallace. Let's listen.
1.6 million people were stopped crossing the border illegally back in 2000. Less than a quarter that many were caught last year. The government's own numbers show, for all the presidents talk about drugs streaming over the border, 80 to 90% of the cocaine, heroin, and fentanyl seized at the border is seized at ports of entry, not along unfenced areas. And in 2017, twice as many of the new people in the country illegally were from visa overstays as were from crossing the border. Again, where's the emergency, the national emergency, to build a wall?
There's a lot of data you just presented there, so I'd like to go through it each one piece at a time, if I could. So let's start with your point about the border crossings in the year 2000. Well, as you know, when George Bush came into office, illegal immigration total doubled from 6 million to 12 million by the time he left office. That represented an astonishing betrayal of the American people. And I'm not going to sit here today and tell you that George Bush defended this country on the southern border, because he did not. One of the biggest changes that's happened since then and now is the mass release of illegal aliens due to a patchwork of court rulings and loopholes in our federal laws and changing tactics from smugglers and transnational organizations.
I don't want to go into all of this, but I mean, let's just focus on that one issue. Right. Four times as many people were coming across the border
then,
in 2000 as now.
Then,
so why is that a natural
back then,
emergency?
95% could be turned around in a matter of days. As a result of loopholes, active judicial rulings, and increasing sophistication from cartels, the reality is that more than half of people crossing the border are what we call non-impactable. They can't be turned around. And so what you see is sophisticated operations and smugglers will actually push out migrants and children and family units to divert border agents, and then because there's not secured areas with the wall, they'll then cross after the border agents have been diverted to those areas.
All right, I'm going to keep going because I could comment on that, but I want you to hear Steve's next exchange with Chris. Let's listen.
But at a fundamental level, we could go down to the details, and you know, Chris, I could go down to the details as much as you want to. But the bottom line is this.
Please don't.
But the bottom line is this. You cannot conceive of a nation without a strong, secure border. It is fundamental and essential to the idea of sovereignty and national survival to have control over who enters and doesn't enter the country. And we can get into the statistics. You want to talk about drugs? There's been a huge increase in drug deaths since George W. Bush and Barack Obama were in office.
I understand that, but 80 to 90% of those drugs that are being seized don't come across an unfenced area as they come from ports of entry. Those are your own Customs and Border Patrol numbers.
Which is the reason why we also asked for additional resources at the ports of entry. But
Chris, what you got?
But Chris, the problem with the statement that you're apprehending 80 or 90% of drugs at ports of entry is that's like saying you apprehend most contraband at TSA checkpoints at airports. You apprehend the contraband there because that's where you have the people, that's where you have the screeners. I assure you, if we had people of that same density and screeners of that same density across every single inch and mile of the southern border, you'd have more drugs interdicted in those areas. You don't know what you don't know, and you don't catch what you don't catch. But as a matter of national security, you cannot have uncontrolled, unsecured areas of the border where people can pour in undetected.
Okay.
One more point. I guarantee you this. If Donald Trump had said he's invoking the National Emergency Military Construction Authority to build a security perimeter in Iraq or Afghanistan or around a military installation in Syria, there would not have been one word of objection from Congress. This is defending our own country.
All right, just to recap a little bit of what Stephen said. He talked about, you know, Chris set it up, and all these reporters are doing the same thing. I mean, you're going to hear this theme, you already have. Jim Acosta was talking about how it's not true. And Chris repeated it on Fox News Sunday over and over that the president is dealing, you know, it's more lies, they say. But the truth is what Stephen said. Even though there may have been more people coming across the border in the past, 95% of them were turned back. Now, because of the change in rules and the undermining of our laws, at least half of them are being released. So more are coming to the country, even though less may be actually coming to the border. And then in terms of the drug intervention, you understand what Stephen just said. Chris gives him this false premise about more people are apprehended at these official border crosses with drugs than on these unprotected borders. And Stephen's plain response is, look, you can track that. You track people as they're coming across these designated points. That's the idea. But all kinds of people are pouring across where we don't have any kind of border or protection, and there's no way of tracking. We know for a fact drugs are coming across there. We just can't track it. And so Stephen ends with this, which I thought was great. You can see why he is the president's chief speechwriter. Let's listen.
This is a deep intellectual problem that is plaguing this city, which is that we've had thousands of Americans die year after year after year because of threats crossing our southern border. We have families and communities that are left unprotected and undefended. We have international narco-terrorist organizations. This is a threat in our country, not overseas, not in Belarus, not in Zimbabwe, not in Afghanistan or Syria or Iraq, but right here. And if the president can't defend this country, then he cannot fulfill his constitutional oath of office.
You know, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's shocking when you watch these news reports. As I said before, they always talk about the political calculation. That's what Chris says all the time. I heard Molly Hemingway. I was so happy that she said on the panel the other day, look, this is not about politics. This is about the safety of our country. And remember that when you hear these discussions that inside the Beltway, it's a disease they all have. They cannot think about reality. They are wooed by the fairy dust that takes them over in the District of Columbia. I want to also tell you that Angel Moms came to the president, to the White House last Friday, desperate to see the president. They were not permitted to come in because they were blocked by staff inside. When the president saw them out in front, he asked who that was, and he insisted that they be brought in. They were, and they had time with him before he signed the bill. They begged him not to sign it, but it was his staff who blocked them from coming in. This is how things are happening. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.